This is The Topic is Trek, episode 117 for Friday, June 24th, 2022. Coming up in this episode, the Superior Podcast is coming. Voyager gets animated. Did someone say space pirates? All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Arrgh! Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already.
Make it so.
Hit it. All that stuff. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Clinton, and welcome to another thrill-packed episode of The Topic is Trek. As I said, I'm one of your co-hosts, which means there are other hosts. That's what that term implies. And first, beaming in to join me with the hip new catchphrase that all you guys and gals out there are just waiting on is Mr. Craig Stepp.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
No, different.
I don't even think that was even right.
What?
Well, I think it's going on the, if you vary it a little bit, then you can, you know, you can't get sued for copyright infringement.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking. I'm looking out for you guys.
Right.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And also beaming in to join me, and possibly even already here, is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I'm everywhere. I'm
omnipresent.
Omnipresent. Omnipotent.
What now?
Hotels. You know, all sorts of.
You know, you should say your doctor for that.
I'm not sure where that was going.
Omniscient.
Didn't somebody have an Omni as a
Dodge had an Omni. I had a Dodge Omni, a 79 Dodge Omni. Sure did.
There you go. You have all the Omnis right there.
I had a friend that had one, and then later on he something happened to it and he got another one. I'm like, what'd you get this thing?
Why?
Because it's Omni.
No, I upgraded to the Plymouth Horizon. It was the same thing.
That's right. You know, I never did figure that out. You know, they like Ford
and Lincoln would brands. Do. Well, Ford
had,
and Lincoln.
Like, wait a minute, they had like the Mustang and then the Capri and then like you said, the Omni and the Horizon. What's
well,
the point?
Also the Taurus and the Sable for
yes,
for,
yeah.
Yeah. The Lincoln was a little more elite. They would have additional features, and you know that's where you get the leather seats in some of those cars. But yeah, I couldn't quite figure out why the car franchise.
You know, all they're doing
did
is
that.
Changing the bumper covers. Maybe a couple options here.
Not even that. It was like
it's
the tail
about the
lights.
Rich Corinthian leather is what it's all about.
Yes.
Anyway, on this show, the topic is cars. Apparently,
indeed. That's right. Well, I tried to tie it back to.
Yes,
to
you did. Yes.
Right there.
Way to lead into our first story.
Yes, but before we can do our first story, we kind of have to check in with you know who.
Oh, do we?
We do.
Didn't we excommunicate him or something?
Well, we're working on it, but
he's one of those guys that thinks that he's our friend.
All right.
He's one of those guys he thinks is our friend, but we don't really like hanging out with him.
That's right.
But we do only because we have to.
He likes hanging out with us more than we like hanging out with him. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
But I think it's his positive attitude that really sells
magnetic. Yeah.
Really sells it.
All right. So since we were just talking about Ricardo Montalban, we're going to lead off the first story that Chuck has for us that is a tie into that.
Kind of related to that.
Kind of.
It's been 5 years since we first learned about Nicholas Meyer's script for a SETI Alpha 5 three-part miniseries. It tells the story of Khan Noonien Singh's time in exile on the planet, following the events of Star Trek episode Space Seed, and of course, before Star Trek II, The Khan of Wrath. The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
But the script was never picked up by CBS Studios. However, you knew there was a however coming. It now appears the series may finally get produced as a podcast.
What?
Imagine that.
Guesting on a recent episode of Page One, the Writer's Podcast, Meyer was asked about the project. He replied, "That will be a podcast."
No, Nicholas Meyer does not talk like a
But you have to. Yeah. I'm giving the listener something to imagine.
Okay.
And I imagine, all right. When the host laughed, he said, "I am not joking. I am concluding a deal to turn it into a podcast, which I will write and presumably direct. And if the podcast is a hit, then maybe we'll revisit it on film of some kind."
Ooh, he sounds more threatening that way, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's making an offer there. I don't know.
You know that scene where Kirk is in the planet and Khan is sitting at the console, kind of leaning back,
yeah,
talking with him? That's how I imagine he's doing a podcast, kind of leaning back with a microphone.
Speaking of Wrath of Khan, I saw something new. I saw some earrings that were the little baby SETI eels. That was pretty good. I said, you know what? I just want one to glue to my neck on the Star Trek cruise. That'll be my cosplay.
They have a little string to like pull it towards your ear.
And then scream. Scream.
Yeah. Yeah. Scream real loud.
I think you should do it, Chuck. Actually, you do it for Dragon Con.
Yeah, Dragon Con's kind of a proving ground.
And speaking of Khan, it's kind of the topic of Trek related, but I don't know, Chuck, if you noticed that in the latest episode of my story,
yes,
you give a scream.
Yes.
And I said, I know exactly what kind of scream he's going for. So I added you the little bonus effect of having
the echo effect. I noticed. Yep. It's like, I don't remember saying it twice.
Was God, it the Wilhelm scream?
No.
He screams the name, you know,
of his dog.
The dog. And I put it in a second time with actually even a third little one behind it with a little waver in it to make it sound pretty much exactly like it did in The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, I gotcha.
Old man Spooner's calling out for his dog that got stuck on the bus.
Right. Well, nice, here you go. All right, so let's move along. So a few months ago, we were treated to a taste of what it would be like if the episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation had been produced in the same style of the original 1970s TOS animated series.
Oh, boy.
TAS.
Yes. And,
well, the team at Gazelle Automations? Is it automations? Animations? Automations?
No, it's okay. Automation.
Okay. Has done it again. I didn't mean to hit my mic like that. This time,
well-oiled professional machine.
I know. This time they have turned their attention to Voyager. Once again, this clip uses the classic animation style. It's full of reused animation action cycles, odd color choices, random appearances by classic animated series characters, and you see all the smudges and all that stuff. It's really cool. Best of all, it pulls all its dialogue from the cringeworthy Threshold episode of Voyager. You know, the one where Paris and Janeway end up as lizards. So anyway, we have a link to the animation and everything here in the show notes for episode 117 over at the topic is Trek.
There it is.
.com. I was just thinking.
Yes.
As Chuck was reading that article first, before me, what if they took that script and made it into a Filmation animation
of the SETI Alpha 5 thing?
Yes. Wouldn't that be awesome? I would watch the heck out of that.
Because that actually happens between Space Seed and Wrath of Khan.
That's right. So right around the time of the animated series is when it would be happening. Right. So, right.
Yeah. So I think I might have to go call
Nick Meyer.
Goldsman or somebody. Yeah. Nicholas Meyer or somebody.
Do I need to get Kurtzman on the phone again for you?
They didn't know that little beetle guy was on SETI Alpha as well.
We're all going to die here.
Right. Right. Well, I got to tell you, I watched, obviously, I know you guys have seen this, but they did such a great job with these two. I would love to see a little 5-episode series, you know, or something small, something that they could actually produce. I wish that Star Trek
it has to be the right episode. And I think they just nailed it with Threshold.
Well, you know, what's keeping them from using some fresh material? I think it'd be cool if they had 5 episodes and, you know, just nothing crazy so they could do it. CBS should.
Oh, you mean get Robert Duncan McNeil back in the studio for some voiceover, that kind of thing?
It could be Voyager. It could be, yeah, whatever. Maybe DS9. They might be working on
this. This is where you need Short Trek's back again. You know, that'd be perfect for a Short Trek.
Yeah, that's not bad either. Wouldn't you watch a little 5-episode series, you know, or something? You know, just have a little fun.
I don't know if I'd watch 5. I mean, remember, we went through the animated series, and it got a little rough after a while.
Yeah. Did we finish that?
We did.
Oh, okay.
We did. Didn't we? Yeah, we did.
I think we
pretty
did.
Pretty sure we did. Yeah. I think we did.
Because season
my
2 was
my memory about that is kind of vague because it's really vague anyway.
Actually, go back and listen to episode 12.
I don't think we did. I don't think we finished the TAS.
All right, I'll have to go back and look now.
Because some was it Discovery? Something was coming on, and we're like, oh, we had to change gears.
All right, well, right. We might have. So imagine what we'll be watching then if we have to watch some more, that is like being produced by Gazelle Automation, that we're watching something new that was an actual, you know, like a filmed episode, and they turned it into this animated episode.
I don't know. The third show we're going to discuss tonight very well could have been an animated one.
Mm-hmm.
It was animated in its own way.
Yes.
Yes, indeed, indeed. All right, well, the latest campaign in Star Trek Online involves a rather unique collection of characters, including Admiral Janeway, as well as Mirror Universe Denison's Captain Killy, Admiral Leda, and Marshal Janeway, who is the Mirror Universe Admiral Janeway. But perhaps the most unexpected character of all is a post-V'ger Lieutenant Ilea.
Hmm.
In fact, Ilea appears to be key to some plan the Mirror Universe Emperor has concocted.
Uh-oh.
Now, to give you a taste of that, rather than just the clip that they have for the game itself, because there's no context to that, I'm including a link in the show notes. I follow a channel called Certifiable In-Game, and the person who does this channel, they do all sorts of different videos, not just on Trek, but they do a lot of Trek stuff where they'll do information about a particular character or a species or a ship or a Federation type of thing. But they also play Star Trek Online, and they do a recording that they edit, so you don't have to watch hours and hours of it, of their gameplay of Star Trek Online campaigns. And so I watched the one that was for the part of this campaign, and you get a chance. So that's the link I have included in there to YouTube, is you can get a taste of, well, what does that really mean? Who are these characters and what's going on in this thing? So he does a really good job of just giving snide comments sometimes about stuff that's going on, but pretty much playing the game straight through, and you get a sense of everything that's happening there.
Now, the Certifiable In-Game, is that that's a YouTube channel is what you're talking about, right?
Yes, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. He recently did one for Cybok, as well as, like, who is this Cybok that we're, and we will be talking about that.
Who is he?
Spoiler alert. That?
Well, but all sorts of, different things, as classes of ships. And like I said, might talk about, who are the Cardassians and that type of thing. So a lot of stuff on that. It's a good channel. If you get a chance to watch the clip, and if you like that, subscribe to that, because a lot of good stuff on there.
All right.
All right. And I didn't assign this next story. So who wants it? It's up for grabs.
I'll take it.
Okay.
If you're going to San Diego Comic-Con this July, you can experience Starfleet's favorite watering hole and explore a one-of-a-kind immersive Star Trek experience by visiting... Where's my reverb? Star Trek 10 Forward, the experience.
Get to drink and that.
When I first read
hobble,
this,
and
I,
hobble back to your quarters.
I was picturing like a repurposed Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time theater characters with like Guinan popping up behind there. Geordi's over playing the piano,
and everybody has to sit in their chairs by putting one leg over the back of the chair.
So. Riker's over there with a trombone.
Except they didn't quietly retrofit it. And he's got like a bear paw. I'm sorry. We conjured up some wacky images, and that was one of them. The venue will feature photo ops and exclusive merchandise, as well as...
No animatronic Riker.
Tasty food. It was like the Chuck E. Cheese pizzas.
They were tasty?
No, wait, not really.
I'm sorry. They might be tasty, but were they food?
It is a Chuck E. Cheese. They come out with pizzas.
Their phrase is, where Trekker can be a Trekker. Yeah, there we go.
And beverages. But you'll need a ticket to get in. And unlike the future...
Oh, we broke Chuck.
Yeah, he broke himself. I don't know.
See, it happens to you, too.
Yeah. That's
crazy. Play the sad trombone. It's Riker. There we go. Wah, wah, wah.
Okay. All right. Sad performance. And unlike the future, this will require money or tokens.
Yeah. Then you get your tickets for the tokens.
Here's your gold press platinum, sir.
A general admission ticket will run you about $60 and include two cocktails, food, access to the 10 forward canteen store, exit through the gift shop, as well as a photo op exhibit activations. I just totally upset this whole story.
Oh my goodness.
If you spring for the VIP admission at $125, you'll also get backstage pass with the robots.
That does not say that in there.
The captain's table seating.
No, you'll get reserved chef's table seating, a flight of otherworldly beverages, and a gift bag of swag courtesy of Paramount Plus. We do note that as of the taping of this episode, we tape. There's tape.
There is tape.
SD cards.
Audio tape. And then we just
We don't have a big budget, okay?
Sorry. All the VIP admissions appear to be sold out. But you never know. Maybe some Cardassians will decide to pass and give up their spots at the bar. Oh, that was the roughest story I've done yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow.
I'm going to put that on instant replay.
I hope some of our listeners had some fun with that one. I was trying to paint a good visual.
All right, well, Chuck tries to center himself here. Let's take a trip up to Vulcan, Alberta, Canada, because in a sign that things are returning at least a bit to normal, the Vulcan Tourism and Trek Center in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada is back open.
Woo-hoo! Sweet. Yay.
And while I can't find any photos of the event...
We're too busy enjoying it.
Vulcan 2022 was scheduled to take place June 10th through 12th with John Billingsley and Chris Doohan as the guests of honor.
Nice.
So I was looking to see if there was a video or something. I couldn't find anything. I was hoping to include a little link to something about that. But I have a link to the Tourism Center where they still list this as an event that's coming up on June 10th through 12th.
Oh, their webmaster's on vacation.
They're back, but they're not like fully staffed at the moment, but they're at least back again.
It was Billingsley's job to fix the website.
That's right. No, he turned it over to Doohan saying, well, you're the miracle worker. Now that was my dad, not me.
Yeah, duh.
All right. Well, that's a lot of stories, including Chuck E. Cheese diversions off to the left there. But we have links to 32 additional stories that we did not have a chance to talk about on the show.
What? How many?
32. Whoa. Or 33 or 34 or 35. I think it was 32. Is it 32? Oh, no, it's up to 33. I threw another one in there at the last minute. So I got 33, a bonus stories in there someplace. And you'll find everything from a story about the design of the original USS Enterprise to an interview with Rainn Wilson, our new Harry Mudd, talking about his love for the original series and Dungeons and Dragons. Just go over to the show notes for episode 117 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Craig's got challenge for artwork tonight. It has to have something to do with Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, boy. Don't you know it? I may even draw something. How about that?
There you go. So something to look forward to. Well, now comes my favorite part of the show, and that's when I get to say... goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
My goodness. Soon, Charlie, soon you will be banished forever.
She hasn't left yet.
I want an auto-tune version of that.
Stay.
Now it's time to go out on our main mission, and there will be spoilers ahead. So just can we have our little klaxon warning quickly?
Oh, we have, let's see, not black alert. There we go.
Spoiler alert.
All right. So negative control at helm. Here we go. Our main mission, we're going to be talking about three, not one, not two, but three episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds as we barrel towards the season finale coming up pretty darn soon.
10 episodes in the season?
10 episodes.
Oh, my.
And we're talking about 6, 7, and 8 tonight.
I know. I'm disappointed. I mean, I'm like, we're at 8 already. Come on.
All right, so why don't, Craig, why don't you fill us in on just the bits and pieces of who wrote this, who directed it, and a little short synopsis type of thing.
Okay, it's not my first rodeo, Clinton. Jeez.
Well, I miss
Mr. Hits the microphone.
I don't want to read the bullet points because I miss what gotcha. Shouldn't be there.
Mr. Hits the microphone.
Yeah, what? Anyway, so, all right, Strange New Worlds, Season 1, Episode 6, Lift Us Up Where Suffering Cannot Reach, written by Robin Wasserman and Bill Walkoff, directed by Andy Armaganian. No, Armaganian. Okay, that works. The short synopsis is a threat to an idyllic planet in the Magellan. Is that how I'm saying it?
Magellan. They said system. Magellan.
Magellan, okay, the Magellan system, reunites Captain Pike with a lost love of his life. To protect her and a brilliant young child known as the First Servant from a conspiracy, Pike offers his help, but all is not as it seems.
I'll say.
All right, so a lot to talk about in this episode, including an ending that I think everyone saw coming, and I want to start there. I want to start at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to start at the end. Well, I want to start at the concept that I swear everybody that I've talked to about the episode and the stuff I've seen online says, "Oh, I knew right away that things were not going to go well. That something was going to happen to this kid." And my theory is that because it's so disturbing, where we end up on this thing, that I would almost think you'd want to telegraph, don't put too much stock in this kid being like a happy prince at the end of this thing, because it's right. not going to go well, and just right. letting you warn right. you ahead of time. I don't know. Did you get that impression? Or, I mean, well, first yes. of all, I should say, did you know pretty early on that this was not going to go well?
A Strange New Worlds has been setting up this routine. I feel like as soon as you see somebody on the screen, new character, I don't trust them. It's like we're kind of getting a trope going with, you know, you see the lady beam aboard and say, oh, Lieutenant Pike. Like, I don't trust her.
Yeah.
And we get that in the next episode. Well, like, I don't trust her either.
Well, I would say that I didn't necessarily see that coming, what happened, but I didn't think it was going to end well, or it was going to end totally differently, because I don't know, I just thought, I wasn't sure it was going to end the way it did with him
becoming a one-man matrix battery.
Yeah. That's right.
Right. What I found interesting is that I had not read this story, but a couple of years ago we were talking about different writings, and Bonnie had written had read the Ursula Le Guin story, the ones who walk away from Omelas, which this is pretty much a retelling of that in a different setting. And apparently they acknowledge that was the inspiration for this story, as well as part of the inspiration for The Burn, because you have once again a child in this ultimate level of distress, mm-hmm. right? That what happens in that story as well. So as we got down into the chamber, I went, I think I know exactly where this is heading, because they've been dropping the hints at that point that I was kind of picking up on about, you know, we all live this great life, but if, you know, if something yep. were to happen to the First Servant, that we would just plummet to the ground. I'm thinking, okay, so this kid is doing a lot of work. How is he doing a lot of this work? What does that mean? He's not like, I don't think he's magical. And dear me. I think things are not going to go well.
I was a bit surprised that they let Pike into the secret chamber and observe this thing that's, you know, not allowed for outsiders. But, you know, since you did us that nice favor of saving the kid, we'll let you witness his destruction.
I feel like part of that was Allura trying to have Pike, because
win him over.
Well, she believed that this was the thing that they had to do, that this was the only logical choice that they had. And so if he saw that he was willingly giving himself to this, that, you know, he might say, well, maybe someday I could live on this planet. Instead, he was like, oh, no way, pal. No way at all.
So let's talk about the other planet then. We had some of these people were colonists on another planet, and they were trying to stop the kids so that Majelis would implode without him.
Well, I have a feeling that, so we're talking about the planet Prospect 7.
Yeah.
And it sounded like they were rejecting this whole concept, that the people that were living on the planet had said, well, we are constantly trying to figure out a way to get around this, but we can't.
Right.
And so we do this. And I feel like the people on the other planet, and we don't really, I don't think we get a sense of exactly, were they sent there or did they decide to go there themselves?
Right.
I guess they decided to go there themselves because they were rejecting this concept, but that they were trying to make the child, the first servant, be unable to fulfill these duties, mm-hmm. and to say, you can't live your existence on the back of this type of suffering.
Right.
And we're rejecting this outright, and we're going to make sure that you can't do this. So we're going to, you know, put this device on the first servant, and it's going to nullify him being able to perform the function.
They could have strengthened that piece of the storyline, in my opinion, because we really didn't know what their motivation was. The guard says
he said he was fulfilling his pledge, but he also said he yelled out, "Long live the first servant."
Right.
So I think that was kind of that clue of rejection of what's going to happen to the first servant. Because the first servant is just going to be like this burned out shell, which they're already planning for who the next first servant is going to be after that. And then we get the subplot here. The B story here is Uhura having another rotation assignment, and she's working with Lan Noonien Singh. And apparently Uhura has a low bar to live up to in some ways, because everybody says, oh, so you did the minimum expected. I mean, we got that from Hammer. We got that from Noonien Singh. It's like, what do these cadets usually do? It's like, yeah, okay, I looked at the door or something. It's like, oh, okay, I read one of the discs or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she goes way above and beyond. But I'm thinking, right, what the heck are these other, you know, cadets doing when they get their training?
Look at the rest of the crew at Starfleet. What the heck?
All the other cadets, they're in the lower decks.
Yes,
so exactly. Uhura is the only one we get to interact with on this show.
Yes, right.
But I did think that was a good thing, that when Uhura was able to decipher all this, the writing and figure out that the people on Prospect 7 were members of the same species, came from the same place, that Noonien Singh said, your work, you figured it out, you present it.
Yeah,
that's right.
That was nice.
You know. And then she said, I'm assuming you're right.
Right.
And also the captain says, so you're pretty confident in this, right? And she's, yep, absolutely. And she was.
Yeah. I like that they're giving Uhura some screen time and not just, you know, seemed like a lot less than Uhura had in TOS.
Oh, yeah. She didn't have much in TOS.
So right. Yeah, I mean, they're really fleshing her out. They're really fleshing out the character. And I like that. Even, you know, for better or for worse, I think it is for the better. I didn't mean to say for the better or for worse. I'm just saying it is better that they're giving her more screen time and they're making her character a little deeper is what I should say.
Yes. I think we've made this comment before that they seem to be doing as good a job as possible, given the number of characters you have to try to have something for all, if not most, you know, most, if not all the characters in every episode. Yeah. Whereas with almost every Trek series, you'll focus on these characters and you won't see that this other character for like 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're making 20 something episodes, it's easy to pare down and focus on 2 or 3 here, 2 or 3 here, maybe 1 over here, you know, mix it up. But this, they got 10. So they either need to use most of them on each one or somebody's going to get lost in the mix, I think.
Now, do you think that they've set Pike up to be Kirk in a way that, oh, look, here's another woman that he's run into that was the love of his life.
Oh, this one's not green.
Pike, I don't know. Pike left the you know, the manual behind in the captain's quarters.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if he's Kirk, you know, level, but yeah, he's obviously gotten around a little bit.
And what's security lesson number 7?
Safe sex?
No.
I don't know, but I don't want to have to do the Mugatu breathing stone.
Pike, Pike says it to Uhura in the turbo lift. He says, you know, watch out for number 7. And she does get lesson number 7 before the end of the show.
Right, because that's leave no stone unturned.
Yep. Yeah. Use protection. That was a
expect the unexpected slap.
All right. So do we have any other thoughts on the episode with the long title, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach?
No, not really.
Okay. All right. Why don't we rate this one while we're here?
Okay.
And I'll go first with this one. Let's see. What am I going to rate it? I'm going to rate it on,
batteries.
I can't remember the name.
You
got a thought?
Yeah, before we move on.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be the episode where Dr. Omega was able to provide for his daughter.
Right. That's right. Because you had the really smart kid and you have the doctor at the end. And yeah, they were kind of teasing like, maybe we can do something for you.
Yeah.
Which I thought was weird that they're so advanced. And he goes, well, this will kind of like give you a little something to go on. It's like, really? Yeah.
It's a tease.
I mean, wow.
I know.
You can upgrade for the real medical advice for $1. It's got in-game help.
Join my Patreon and you can, there we go.
Yeah, this has in-app purchases.
Yeah, yeah, in-app purchases to save her from cybermyalgia or whatever it was.
Right.
But we don't use money. Oh, well, sorry, then you're out. Never mind. Yeah, and we get the setup. Now, of course, we know better than that now, but we get the setup that this is the way it's going to go. He's going to have a piece of the puzzle. And then I think we're all figuring that episode or two later, he might get closer with some of the piece of information and lead to a cure, right? Because this is like, this will help you set you on the right path to where you need to go. And things don't turn out that way, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. All right. I am going to do this on, how about 1 to 10? Elder Gamals. Yes. Let's see. Sounds like something from Andy. I don't know. I am going to rate this one. I'm going to give this one an 7.5. I would have gone a bit higher. I felt like I couldn't really tell if I'm reading too much into it about how early they kind of appeared to telegraph what was going to happen to the kid.
Yep.
And to your point, Chuck, I felt like you didn't get a ton of motivation for, I'll call them the separatists, the people that were living on Prospect.
They were mighty mad because they were willing to go to warp on a tractor beam.
Warp on a tractor beam, and they took a hit and crash landed. Yeah, Uhura had a little trouble with the phasers at that point. So I understood the father's motivation.
Right.
But you needed more than that because it's an entire movement that's going on here, including some of the guards in the palace. So like to know a bit more about, I mean, we can understand this is a horrible thing. We don't want that to happen, but we don't really know, well, what is their alternative? Do they want the entire Cloud City to just fall into the lava or something? I mean, what,
right.
Do they have a goal involved? So, but I did like the fact that they didn't shy away from the ending.
Yes.
That they went there. So that's kind of an up on
in
so
I'm pretty gruesome detail. I mean, that kid was horrified till he got hooked up.
Look at a piece of bacon.
Right.
Yeah. The one coming, the used battery looked like a piece of bacon.
Yeah.
All right. So that's mine. I'll go to Craig next.
I'm going to agree with you. This is probably one of my lesser favorite or lesser enjoyed shows of the season. I'm going to say 7.5. I just wasn't super engaged the whole time. I just couldn't really get into this one that much. I mean, it was all right. You know, and I was like, oh, okay, Pike's going to fight or something. You know, when he started, they had to hold him back. Then I started thinking, why'd she even lead him down there? She knows how he's going to act. It's like she was rubbing it in his face. It was more like, I don't know, it just didn't seem right. So, yeah, I didn't really buy this one that much.
Okay. And what about you, Chuck?
I'm going with a 7. There was, for all the reasons we talked about, it just didn't really, I wasn't that invested in it. The giveaway with the kid was a little early. Pike, he seemed a little dense about the whole thing. You know, so he can ascend and save us all. yeah, that's fine. Oh, we lost our kid. We're all gonna, we're done for. He's like, well, no, you're not done for. You know, he seemed a little like he didn't. He's a pretty sharp guy in other episodes. Like he can figure things out on inference. And yet this one was like, he was just really slow to pick up on a lot of clues.
Do you think that's why they had a love interest involved?
That's why I know what he was thinking of.
I mean, that could be the argument for why there was a love interest. It's like, you know, well, he's not getting it because he's distracted. Yeah.
We've seen him reason his way out of trickier situations though.
I still think that I think you're probably onto something, Clem, but yeah, I agree with you guys.
7.
All right.
Of Ooh. 9.
Somebody's putting a chart in there. That's good. All right. Next up we have Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 1 Episode 7, The Serene Squall. Written by Bo DeMeo and Sarah Tarkoff, directed by Sydney Freeland. And a short synopsis of this is a threat to an idyllic planet. No, that's the same, description. All right, so let's see. We're going to make up our own one to this. So there is the Enterprise goes to assist some colonists stranded at the edge of Federation space, but find themselves captured by pirates.
How about Arrgh. That?
Good? Arrgh. Yeah, that'll work.
That'll work. And meanwhile, Spock and T'Pring are getting messy.
Yeah, well, T'Pring seems to be real intent on focusing on, you know, this humanity thing that Spock is like half of him. And Spock is like, me, not so much. I'm not that interested. Right. I'm not into that.
I read some books on sex. Like, you know, he almost has a coffee out the nose like moment.
He does a spit take. What?
I haven't read that book either.
that was great acting right there. That was such a Spock. Oh, you know.
I am unfamiliar with that works as well.
Oh, man. I laughed when I saw that. That's great.
I think every episode has at least one good laughable moment. That was it.
Apparently he has to really catch up on all these writings because then Kirk in The Voyage Home has to give him the names of even more of these, like, you know, these type of stories on the bus. There he goes, the writings of, you know,
oh yeah,
so and so and so. So yeah, Spock has a lot of reading to
here
to
Spock catch up. Start with Go Dog Go.
Yeah, all he's doing is reading the what was it, he was reading the journals of the
the works of Sybok or Sarek or what,
you know? I was thinking of the one of the first episodes where the people weren't there anymore and they were reading the journals.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yes. Those scroll type things.
The digital scroll tube.
He was like, I'm looking forward to reading that. Later on, you see him kind of looking at it. He's actually turning it. I'm like, wow, that's really
not a whole lot of storage in each one of these things.
It's like a wax cylinder. This one says Mary had a little lamb on it. So to your point, Chuck, this is the next episode. And we have Dr. Aspen who's here. And
my first impression is I don't trust her.
Now, I think that they probably also thought that was going to be the case. And so they gave a couple of places where you thought, oh, surely here is when she's going to, they're going to turn, right? But that it doesn't happen there. They take a hit when they're going into the turbo lift. They get a phaser, but don't use it on Spock. So I kept trying to say, we're not turning this person yet. And you start to then maybe they're hoping you get lulled into, I guess I was wrong, because we're now like 3/4 of the way through the episode and nothing has still happened. But at 3/4 of the way through, that's when it happens.
Yeah.
There were some good Spock introspection moments, you know, who are we? Do boxes limit us all? And you kind of got this sense that Spock is neither Vulcan nor human. He is special unto himself. The audience already knows that, but you got to remember this is early Spock and he's still going through his Vulcan teenage years, trying to figure out who he is.
Yeah. I think it's adding to the, excuse me, his little internal confusion, you know, and he's trying to find his place that we see all the way up into the movies, you know, right when he's trying to go through the colon R. Yes. Thank you. And
remember when you get past 50, have a colon R every year.
Yeah. Everyone for breakfast. Or is that your doctor for your colon R?
And we talk about the colon R in this episode as well, which also, I mean, when you watch it the second time, Dr. Aspen, AKA Captain Angel, dropping all these hints.
She's worked with Vulcans before.
She's worked with Vulcans and Vulcans that aren't necessarily all set on logic.
Yeah. As soon as she said that, I went, I think I see where this is going.
I thought I didn't see where it was going till the end. I loved the reveal at the end. I thought it was more of the Vulcan extremists. I read it backwards. Not people that were abandoning logic, but people that were like the ultra. Well,
I'm kind of in the same boat with you. I thought for a minute it could be, I'm going to go ahead and say it. Can I say it?
Yeah.
Sybok. I thought it was going to be Sybok. But then I was kind of in the same boat. I went back and forth a little bit until, of course, the reveal, you see the beard. And I was like, So, and actually, our friend Mark B. Lee, I think he said, I was scrolling through on Facebook and he said, I've been Sybok. I went, and so when I saw the show, I went, dang it, I know where this is going.
Oh, he gave it away.
I did it without really saying it, but
he did. He said it really without saying it. He said,
a lot of times, you know, we got flack for, Spock didn't have a sister. Where did Michael Burnham come from? That's not canon. This kind of solidifies it. I mean, nobody can deny Star Trek V happened. Right? So it's a way of sort of putting that horse in front of the cart and saying, yes, we are admitting that he knows he has a brother at that point. So I kind of like that twist, like, whoa, okay, we've re-canoned the canon. Or we fired the cannon or something. I do like when they were caged up and trying to get the pirates to mutiny. Alpha Braga 4? No, not Alpha Braga 4. And the, you know, we as the viewer are going, oh, please do tell.
Yes.
Here comes a plan that nobody likes that's going to go.
Yeah. I think it also highlights the dysfunctional family that Spock has. You know, I mean, we got hit there. I made a little Star Trek meme a long time ago and put it on the Facebook group, the Sarek bunch. And I had the nine squares with, you know, Sarek, Amanda, uh-huh. Amanda and Cybok. And I just kept thinking, wow, their family really is kind of messed up.
Yeah. I think we talked about that in the, we're talking about Discovery and how it's like, wow, his relationship with all his kids just really was the worst.
Yeah. I hate to be there on Father's Day.
I mean, he seemed to be having a good one with Burnham until she found out that he chose Spock over her to go to the Vulcan Science Academy.
Yeah.
Which then didn't work out either, because then Spock decided to go to Starfleet instead. And, you know, so it's like, it's just like, wow, disaster everywhere you turn with that guy.
It was a double loss. Thanks.
There were a couple Spock. of good lines that I made note of in here when T'Pring is talking to Captain Angel and she says, Paktar, Paktar, you know, like potato, potato. And then she says that again later. And then I think it was Ortega says, what does fire gently even mean?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I've often wondered that myself. It's like, let somebody else ask that question.
Yes, right.
And then they show Pike steering the pirate ship with the wheel. It's like,
I know,
that was a little
wheel.
Cliche. That was a little too much.
Well, what was funny is they were all kind of in their respective places on the bridge.
That's right. Tiny space, like a closet.
Yeah.
And they were a little premature taking over, you know, doing all that stuff because the mutiny was still in progress behind them.
One thing that kind of bothered me,
one thing that I noticed really quickly is Pike did not call it. I don't know whether this is like an intentional or unintentional nod to something that was on the air at the same time as TOS, but he didn't call it the Wild West, the edge of space there. He called it the Wild Wild West.
Yes.
As in the Wild Wild West, which was on when Star Trek, the original series, was on.
How close do you want to get? First date or third date? Blind date.
Blind date.
I thought there were just, the thing that bothered me in the beginning was there were a lot of assumptions flying around. Like, here's a pile of debris. Oh, there's no people. They must have been taken. Where would they be taken? They'd be taken to the edge of Federation space. I watched it twice and I went, No, the writers just took some big leaps right there with Spock and Pike's conversation.
Well, wasn't when they were having that dinner, or could be lunch or breakfast because it's in space, it's dark outside all the time, in Captain Pike's quarters, and Dr. Aspen is talking about this. So didn't she have basically an idea of roughly where they were? So that's why they were going to that location.
Right. And you get there and there's a bunch of debris. Your natural assumption is they must have been taken as hostages. And she wasn't really feeding them those lines either. It was like, wait, they jumped a lot on that.
Yeah.
And then they get trapped in that security web net with the asteroids. We can't go forward. Well, if we move forward, kaboom. If we fire, kaboom. How do you know if you fire, kaboom? If we fire at the wrong one, kaboom. You're not even reading your sensors and you're just sort of figuring this stuff out. So there were two big gaps in there that I went, they just leaped forward a lot.
You missed the weirdest thing at all in this episode is that they have to wait 2 days.
Yeah.
To get authorization back from Starfleet. Okay, that's fine. They're out at the edge of Federation space. They, you know, you have the relays and blah, 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 blah. But they can talk to Vulcan or wherever that penal client is, real time.
Yeah, that's right.
No delay whatsoever.
It's closer. It's around. Wait. Yeah. Vulcan's in Federation space, but yet it takes two messages to get a.
The Vulcans have 5G.
Oh. There you go.
Oh.
Those Vulcans are always ahead of us. They never give us their technology till they think we're ready for it.
I did also think it was interesting to note that T'Pring, in her personal log at the beginning of her narration, was using star dates, because you would think that the Vulcans probably begrudgingly have to, you know, play along with everybody and use star dates. But if it's your personal log, maybe you don't. You want to just use something that's really Vulcan, not use star dates such and such in it. I don't know. Just seemed like, okay, I can buy it, but it felt wrong somehow at the
same
time.
I think I'll do my personal Vulcan log in Klingon.
Mm. Well, not so much the language, but just, you know, not using the date that it would be on Vulcan, you know, at that point.
Was it like 1974 or something that she picked?
1997, something, yeah. 1997.
And yet the next episode was significantly further ahead, and I'm wondering, wow.
Well, maybe they are using it. Well, theoretically, the dates will vary depending on where you are, so that might have something to do with it.
Or they're showing them out of order, like some episodes.
An international date line for the galaxy. Right.
They crossed over. Is this yesterday or tomorrow? Tomorrow is yesterday. Oh, no, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
So we get to see the back of Cybok and his beard, which is longer there in the facility than it is in Star Trek V. But we also get to see another character.
That was his COVID beard.
Yeah. We get to see one of the characters that will prove to be significant later on in Amok Time, Stahn.
Stahn, yes. Hey, Stahn. Wink, wink.
Yeah. I thought you were when you mentioned debris, I kept thinking, that sounds like a Vulcan name too.
debris. or a French meal, one or the other.
And Sauron was Vulcan.
Now, we also seem to have the beginnings of, in this episode, Nurse Chapel's switch of attitude, right? We've had this the playful back and forth between them.
But Spock unloads a mighty kiss upon her in front of everyone.
And then she realizes that there's no way in heck this is going to happen, because he's not that kind of guy. You can see her start to shut down. And I'm not sure if we're already at that point that she's the shutdown longing type of character that we have Chapel in on the original series. Because we got there really fast, if that's the case.
Right.
But it's like, that's kind of the headspace she was in at the end of that episode.
Mm-hmm. I think it kind of showed the confusion in her head. She wants something with Spock, but she didn't think she can do it. Or, you know, the confusion is there because he also has T'Pring, and it's a complicated situation.
And then he hooks up with Uhura in the Altverse. It's just all messy.
It is. Well, speaking of Uhura, we'll make note of the fact that she was not on the bridge. So she theoretically still does not really make this connection of T'Pring and Spock as being a wedded couple.
So in TOS, when she says, "He's beautiful, right. Spock, who is she?" She is my wife, exactly. T'Pring.
Yep.
All
right. So we're ready to give our review ratings for The Serene Squall.
Yes.
Okay. We'll go in reverse order. We'll begin with Chuck.
I'm going to give this an 8. Had a few holes. I didn't really care for the assumption part. But overall, I liked the story. Thought the lady at the beginning was predictable, but still liked the few funny moments that I have come to expect. Every show has a couple of those that make you laugh out loud, and sometimes you have to hit pause. So I am giving this, 8. 8, Lirpas? I think they mentioned that somewhere in the show.
I think in the previously on Star Trek. Okay. Then we go to Craig next.
All right. I'm also going to give it an 8. I liked it better in the last episode, but I think, what's her name? My mind blank. Dr. April's, what was her real name? Oh, Captain Angel. I think, that character was interesting.
Why do the bad guys always have to drape one leg over the captain's armchair? It's like, who sits that way? I mean, I sit that way in our living room chair because the TV is off to the side.
Well, maybe the view screen is off to the side.
Right. Maybe the captain really doesn't normally look at the view screen, and they do when they're sitting in the captain's chair.
Because what's her name? Cool to look at the view screen. Osira did that too on Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think Captain Angel, I think you're going to see Captain Angel again from what they were saying on the Ready Room.
Yeah. So. And it'd be interesting to see if we see more. I'm assuming we're also going to see more of Cybok.
Hey, by the way, don't you think it's funny we see Cybok in an episode where they're trying to take over the Enterprise? What happened last time he was around?
Well, not try to take over the Enterprise. There's another... I'm surprised they didn't also just go through all of Starfleet's records while they were taking over the Enterprise.
Well, I mean,
they already had
in Star Trek V, they stole the Enterprise.
Right.
And in this one, they stole the Enterprise. We're trying to.
He was working. He told Captain Angel, here's my theory about how one takes over the Enterprise. See if that works for you. And she goes, yeah, it worked. Okay, great.
Get them to share their pain.
I'm going to try another way to do it next time, but it's good to know that one worked.
Yeah. It's a proof of concept.
Yeah.
Get them to share their pain, Angel.
I'm going to give it an 8 too. The reason that I wasn't surprised by the eventual turn of Captain Angel. I liked when they were having the conversations with Spock that were seemingly perhaps to be manipulative to make themselves seem something they were not, but were giving insight to Spock about things that will eventually inform decisions made by Spock, that they were honest conversations about these types of things. And I thought, well, that's a shame that she's not really a counselor on the ship, because I'd like to hear more of those conversations between
them. Yeah. At first I was like, okay, I see where this is cool. They're going to have her around and she's going to put, you know, work on Spock's psyche a little bit, to make him who we know. And then, I'm with you.
All right. And then move on to our last, one. So, Craig, you give us the quick, Chuck on this one. Cause Craig, you gave us one already, right?
I did.
This is season one, episode 8, entitled The Elysian Kingdom, written by Akilah Cooper and Onitra Johnson, directed by Amanda Rowe. The USS Enterprise becomes stuck in a nebula that is home to an alien consciousness that traps the crew in a fairy tale.
Now, this one was a weird one. And I don't know about you, but I was watching the episode going, I hope there's more to the episode than what I'm seeing at first.
It had markings on the beginning. You know, I am not a married man. It just, I have a note on here that said, oh, the memes from this show and cosplay. That felt like all that was going to come out of this, but holy crap, they turned it around.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not that I didn't like the performances. I mean, Anson Mount
as a coward
is hilarious.
Anson Mount as the cowardly lion, everyone. Yeah.
He's like, can I go stay back in the quarters?
Just go back and see the guy about the thing.
Safest place for me is in the castle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah, and the interplay between Ortegas and Pike about stuff was
Starfall is thirsty. That's a ridiculous name for a sword. It's a great name for a sword.
Yeah, she was dying to kill something. And Leon can sing.
If that was her voice, we don't know.
It's part of her last name.
Ha 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 ha! Oh, I see what you did there.
I do believe that. I do believe that is her voice. I think she does.
Many of the people,
and her dog.
Yeah, many of the people on that show are very talented, as we've learned from Star Trek crews.
And that actually is her dog. That she
I heard about that before the show started. Yes.
Yeah, she was saying in the ready room that she was had her dog on the set all the time, and somebody said, you should see if they will have the dog on the show. She said, yeah, right. But she talked to one of the producers. I'll pitch that idea.
And there it was. One,
there you go.
Star Trek history. Well, they
had a cat on Discovery, so.
Yes.
Yeah, but that wasn't that wasn't his cat in real life.
No.
How do you know?
Because they had the cat's owner. Well, the two cats.
Yes.
Yeah. Two cats for Grudge.
Hey, by the way, I do love that they still have to grab the handles in the turbo lift,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which we've seen them do several times. But and Bingo grabbing it's a you know sick bay.
Well, yeah, they did that when they were playing Star Trek Bingo too.
Right, they had to grab it and give a destination for it.
That was pretty funny.
They're working on a version of that for the Star Trek cruise, by the way. I have no idea what it is, and hopefully nothing is dangerous, but should be a riot. I'm looking forward to
it. It's going
to
drop and a free fall.
Get in the elevator, ready to push buttons at the same time. Boom!
Yeah. I think Spock, Pollux, he was a great double crosser. I think he did a great job.
He reminded me like a cross between, what did I have here? Either Snape or Kylo Ren. But yeah, he was pretty good.
And we get to see we're starting to see more from I think it's Jenna Mitchell, the person who sits next to Ortega's on the bridge.
Oh right, yeah.
She was in the first episode and then she kind of disappeared for a while. But she's been in the past few of them, and she was a Crimson Guard in this one. As they were trying to take Hammer away, she was the one saying, we don't have to pay any attention to you, and you know.
Oh queen. Yeah.
So she's getting more to do. So I think we're going to start to have her in the dynamic as well on what's happening.
They should. We saw Kyle several times. And
Princess Thalia's dress was as wide as the whole corridor. Like, she couldn't move right or left. She had to stay in the middle of the corridor.
Yeah.
Know how elaborate costumes are, but they certainly seem like they were elaborate, and they did a featurette that showed a lot of the work that was done on them. The guards' outfits, I think they said there were like 150 pieces to the Queen's guards' outfits,
and they had to make three of them at least.
Yeah.
Well, you know what that reminds me when you bring that up is was it the Ready Room one or two episodes ago, they had the prop guy on there talking about how much the tricorders cost and the phasers cost. He said, this is about eight grand. I was like, $8,000. Oh my gosh. I mean, you got a close up look. They're beautiful, but
right. And the thing is that they said they made four or eight of them because most of the ones that you see are non-functional props made out of, plastic or, something that gets banged around an awful lot. But if you see a close up, those are the hero props.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I liked how on the phaser he took the mini phaser off the top and had like a little double A battery.
Even in the future.
That's right.
Battery's not
power important. Cell, it's a power cell, I'll tell you.
I like the way Hammer was getting into his role too. I like science.
I made lots of notes on Hammer that I actually liked him better in this episode than I have in the past. He wasn't as arrogant. He was willing to help out, and at times he was funny.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What was the line I had in here from him? It was, where'd it go? Oh, you will feel the full power of my full wizard powers.
That's right. It's
like he's trying to struggle. It's like, there's no such thing, Your Highness. He's bluffing.
Yeah. Well, he's also more of a team. Yeah, like I said, a team player. I really like him in here. I had a bonus note for him. Just like you said, he was trying to be a wizard. Oh, yeah. He was told Mbenga, don't beat yourself up about it. I was like, it's like being supportive, you know?
Yep.
Well, he's learning. I mean, because he one-on-one, he really wasn't. He started like loosen up with Uhura in that episode.
Yeah.
So maybe he's going to come around a bit more as time goes on.
Well, speaking of him, he was in the dungeon, which was the transporter pad
with a cage on it. Yeah, there were a lot of funny places, just kind of just plants all over the place and Chapel's making up this witch's brew and sick bay.
Yeah. Well, I thought this was very TOS like because, you know, in TOS, they would have the same set. They would just put stuff on it to make it look different. Just like they put plants everywhere. You could clearly see the ship. It was almost like they were doing a play on the ship.
What are her dopamine levels?
No, I got the, I've written down the best line of the show.
Yes.
When Una and Ortega were talking, a raven wouldn't be too much trouble to call, you know, like she said, you go, why didn't you call me? A raven wouldn't have been too much trouble.
Sorry, I forgot my Hogwarts owl. That one went right by me, Craig. Thanks for pointing that out. That's a good line.
A raven wouldn't be too much trouble. I know. I was like,
wait a minute. You guys aren't supposed to know each other. Well, we know each other very well.
Very well. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when Benga goes, wait, hold on a second. What? Yeah.
Oh my.
You're not supposed to know each other.
Now, I really liked how they brought it all down and Benga had, he was given the choice. It was his crew.
Oh man, that was
it was kind of set up before because Una said, do not put the crew
right
before your daughter. Right. And so, and that's exactly where he was put. And he didn't have to technically make that choice.
Yeah. Which, and then he asked the little girl to make the choice. I'm like, do you want to go or do you want to stay?
Yeah. Do you want to go where the fun thing is or back into the transport?
Let me just put this on you.
Yeah. But then they, you know, they tied it off real quick. A few seconds later, this grown woman shows up and, you know, says, thank you.
Well, when you came back, I was like, well, that, you know, I was doing the same thing. I was like, what? You know, and, when she revealed it was herself.
So I was thinking, cool. Well, if she says that we'll run into each other again, I just know it. I'm thinking, and you'll be what, like 112 in the next 20 minutes.
I'm thinking it's, you know, I think it's kind of, any time is different there.
Right.
There's, you know, they're fourth.
Sure. And
might be sure fourth dimensional being. You know,
they'll romp about for a while.
She was gone for what? Less than a minute. And Benga could have gone with her and come back in 10 seconds and had a few years to hang out with her.
Well, that's true.
He didnn't have a Boltzmann brain. Which we were reading up on just prior to the show starting.
Which is an actual,
it's an actual
thing.
Theory. But if you read the Wikipedia article on Boltzmann braids, it gets pretty deep pretty quick, but you will find a reference to Hawking radiation in there somewhere.
Oh my God. Well, anyway, I did like how they tied it together and some of it was silly. And, you know what my big takeaway from this is, this is the kind of episode that really illustrates or highlights the advantage of having an episodic series, because you can take a break, do a story like this, and then do something different next time.
Well, it still has a tie to these threads that you've woven earlier about.
And that's fine. Yeah. And that's great.
What's her name? Rakia? You know, Mbega's daughter that they've set up a couple of times now. You know she's sick. You know she's stuck in the pattern buffer,
and then they've been reading the story,
right?
You know,
So
no, that's perfect, and that's enough thread that I think really makes it enjoyable to watch.
We were invested in that character enough to have an emotional reaction at the end of this show. I thought that was just brilliantly done by the writers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And solve the problem that I thought they were going to have is that, well, if she's stuck in the pattern buffer, then she should not age between materializations. But the child will age, so you run out of time to have that story continue because, you know, she looks much different than she did like 2 years ago when they filmed that last one.
Oh, the actress. Yeah. They had to do all her scenes in like 1 week.
Yeah. Well, you know, she must age in the buffer a little bit because.
Scotty?
She was there and she said that she was lonely.
Scotty was there a long time.
Yeah, Scotty was there a long time. But, I mean, she was – they mentioned that she was lonely, and so was the entity that was in the nebula.
Speaking of
actors – that's why they were a lot. That's why they were alike.
I know this is off topic, but speaking of actors aging, have you all seen so far all of Stranger Things?
Yes.
How did they do Little 11 with, unless they filmed that 4 years ago?
Yeah. No, I think they did a good job with it. They did.
That was incredible.
Mm-hmm. They did. Well, that's the topic of Stranger Things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've had cases and other things with, we've had de-aging and so forth going on. And I think that that's now becoming very, fairly easy to do in some ways. I don't want to get off on a different franchise, but I noticed that I was seeing clips, and I haven't seen the entire thing of Obi-Wan series, but you have Luke in that, or maybe it's not, maybe it's not in that, maybe it's in some, maybe it's a Mandalorian, but
yeah.
So you have Luke younger, but he doesn't do a lot of moving. He's very, very stationary.
Oh, it was, yeah, it was Boba Fett.
Okay, so it's very, very stationary, but you have the face mapped correctly.
Yes.
So I think you're taking these little leaps forward, and that I'm sure is going to come into play in Trek.
Yeah.
In the very near future, about one way or another.
Yeah, the Luke that I saw, he was a little, not stoic, he didn't move much, but speaking and looking at him, it was believable enough to go, okay, I see what they're doing here.
Yeah, the scenes with the younger Millie Bobby Brown was just, there were too many of them to make me think this was de-aging, because it was smaller size, different face shape. It was, and there were lots of speaking parts, and you didn't get that feeling like it was that stiff robotic, like your lips are numb when you're talking.
Yeah, it looked natural.
Yeah, I'm seriously thinking that this was either really good deep fake, or they knew what they were doing four or five years ago and filmed all of these scenes at the same time.
Well, you can probably find a making of featurette or something that will discuss that stuff.
But anyway,
maybe they'll de-age Lawrence Luckinbill, for Cybok.
Is Larry still with us these days?
I don't see dead. He's 87.
Though. They gotta de-age us so we can go back and record a few podcasts.
There are so many things I want to do again. or don't do what I want to do.
No, again. I did it the first time. That's fine. I'm done with that one now.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's rate this one.
Okay, let's rate this one. So we can go forward again, I guess, for this one.
You,
so
Clinton. You're Clinton first.
Okay. Let's see. I will rate this one. I'm going to rate this one 8.5. I wish we'd had a little bit. I think it's the timing for me. I wish we'd had something a little bit more serious in between a pirate one and this one. So I'm trying to not judge too harshly on its placement in the run of the show, but I'm going to give it an 8.5. I really like the interactions between the characters. I think I was just, for the entire length of the story, not the ending paid off well, but I think for the entire length of the story, I was looking for a little bit more out of it, a little bit more meat, which I wasn't going to get because of the way the ending plays out. Mm-hmm. So for me, 8.5.
Yep.
And so we go forward. So that would be you, Craig.
All right. I'm going to say, you brought up something. I kind of had the thought of too, is that I wish there was a little bit, it needed a little bit more, just a little something more to the end for the show, a little more meat or something in there. But otherwise, again, I'm ecstatic. I'm all in for the episodic episodes. And this highlights exactly why, because it's one of those odd episodes that you may not get if you were doing a big overarching story. I love it. And I'm going to get an 8.5 as well.
Okay. And you, sir?
There was one editing glitch that I saw. It was in the hallway scene where Uhura's squaring off with, was it Ortegas? No, with Mbengas. And you see Pike walk over to her side, and he's standing right by her side. Ortegas stomps her foot, and he backs up a little bit, and they cut away for like just a split second, and then he's in the way back. He's like, there's no way he faded that far back that fast. So it was just... That was the only thing.
He's just that cowardly.
Yeah, that cowardly. Whoop! I'm willing to take the back seat and at a moment's notice. I will. No, this is for me. This is a solid 10. Okay. I loved it. I laughed. Wow. I cried. I thought it had everything. This was a 10 for me, despite how fast, you know, Pike can fade into the background.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't there the whole episode. Something else that I thought was interesting is how soon into, I know we're in episode 8, but how soon into their voyages that we got rid of her, his anchor, his daughter, you know, in the.
Yeah, but like I said, it was going to be a really hard one to sustain for a variety of reasons. And to me, I think the biggest one was just going to be, as you just had this conversation about an actress in Stranger Things, they're not going to stay looking the same. And she should not age at all.
She could have gotten through this season, but it would have kind of got old. It's like, how many times are we going to see him reading to his daughter? What are they going to do with this? They did it. We asked, what are they going to do with it? They did it.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. We had a Warp Speed roundtable, but we're running long, so I think we will save that for next episode.
And the next episode, we'll be wrapping up the last two of these.
Right. Yeah. And have they announced what?
The titles.
What's next?
Yeah, do we have something coming?
Or
back?
Do we have to go back to the animated series?
I think I was looking at the list that I had from a couple of months ago, and it just goes as far as the end of Strange New World. So I'm not quite sure if we're getting Lower Decks
or Prodigy
back at that point. I know we're not getting Picard at that point because they just wrapped a couple of months ago. But
my money's on Prodigy picking back up because I think it makes sense. But who knows?
Right, because that would still be the second half of the first season, and they're working on the second season. So we got the first 10 of a 20 episode season one before all this. So in theory, it could be, but I would think by now we would kind of have more on that. Kind of surprised. All those people abandon, you know, Paramount Plus for the 3 weeks that there's no Trek on.
Yeah. Stock price plummets. Money,
yeah.
All right. But with that said, we are going to wrap because it is time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here. And we're living in a time in, you know, Pike's era where there's plenty of dilithium all over the place anyway.
We warped on out of here.
And there goes the dilithium. We spin it all.
Whoopsie.
Are we allowed? Oh, yeah. We're allowed to say dilithium now.
We are. And you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4. You can find me at comedyforecast.com on Instagram and Facebook and MeWe and Twitter. And, you know, you have your little home assistant thing, whether it's by Apple or Google or Alexa. You can find me on there as well. You just got to know how to ask.
I know. You know what? Hey, a side note. I tried when they first announced, hey, you can listen to podcasts on Google Home. Uh-huh. I asked it to listen to the Technorama. Okay, here's the Techno Forecast episode 1. I was like, what? No. And I would ask for Comedy Forecast. It would never give it to me. So, it was frustrating.
We need to work on better branding.
We do. We just call it The Show or something like that. Aaron had the right idea with The Big Show. That was it.
The Big Show.
Very, very easy. Very, very
The easy. Huge Show. There we go. I'll get my son on it. He can brand our shows.
All right. Speaking of that, who speaks for you guys about where they can find you when they're not watching The Topic is Trek or listening to it?
Well, I'll do it. I was going to see if you're going to do it or not. You can find Chuck and I over at the Technorama podcast. Go search for Technorama podcast in Google, or you can Google. Cancel.
And you can find us on the underside of most bottle caps.
Just search the internet. I won't say the word again because it wants to get right. Just search for Technorama Podcast and you'll find us on Twitter, Facebook, Google, you know, anywhere you get your podcast.
Okay. So it's time to hit the theme, boys.
This one? This one.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton. Thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't
put on
the red shirt. That almost worked this time.
Wait till next time.
Okay, save her back at the castle. I'm going now.